Welcome to Dark History Time with Brian. A few things before we get started. Need to let you know that you might find some of this material disturbing. We do use adult language on the show. Listener discretion is advised. Something new for us on this episode. I had mentioned previously that I wanted to try to do some interviews, and I couldn't think of anybody better for my first attempt at this than my good friend Tina Marie Ronan. I will have her probably better explain what all she does, because all I know is she's awesome, psychic. I don't know what the clairvoyant. I don't know all the terminology, but I'm going to let her explain that to you.
Hello, Brian. I love Brian. Brian is my brother from another mother. We instantly made a connection the very, very first time we ever met. And it was like we knew each other, though we had never met before. So thank you, Brian, for having me on your show. I appreciate that. Yes, I am a psychic medium. I am actually a third generation. No, I don't do readings for people. I don't read tarot for people. I use my gifts in other ways, but I create hats, I create metaphysical jewelry, and I create custom smudge sticks, so that keeps me busy.
Yeah, three businesses now, correct?
Three businesses, and I am in eight different stores.
Oh, wow, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think there's too much free time for Miss Ronan.
No. Not a lot of free time.
Well, I think that's probably a good problem to have, though, isn't it?
It is. It's a good problem to have, and you tear your hair out for 9 months, and then things settle down in the winter. You build stock back up, and guess what? Come March, it's all gone again. So, but it's still good. All is good.
Well, the reason that I was thinking that Tina Marie would be a good guest to have on here is I have always been semi-skeptical about these things, and I don't have a good understanding, so I thought she would be a perfect person to help us understand a little bit better the linkage between what I call dark history and what it is she does. I think what I'm going to start with, though, that might be a little bit easier, and I know you told me that you're what's considered a baby shaman, so it's new to you.
Yes.
What intrigued me some is the shamanism, and just based on my interest in the native folks and a number of their philosophies that kind of speak to me, I thought that would be a nice, easier intro to begin this conversation before we get into the deep, heavy, dark stuff.
Okay. So what is it you want to know?
Basically, what is there a definition, or excuse me, a difference between what's considered a shaman and what some native tribes consider the medicine man? Is there a difference? And if so, what am I missing there?
Some people do consider it two different things. It just depends upon the tribe and your perspective. A lot of people do consider a medicine person also a shaman. A shaman is kind of a shepherd of the soul. Basically, we go behind the scenes. If you've ever watched any of the shows where it looks like they're not quite on Earth, they're kind of behind the scenes. That's what we do. We kind of step into, and then we walk with people spiritually. We also do a lot of healing with different people in the land and situations, and it's all done behind the scenes more spiritually than anything else.
Okay. That leads me to, I think what I've studied probably more than any other tribe is probably the Lakota tribes.
Okay.
And even though Wovoka wasn't a Lakota, he is the one that brought the ghost dance to the Lakota attention. And I guess my question is, he says that the idea of the ghost dance came to him. The ancestors told him, you need to do this dance, and then the buffalo will return to Earth. The white men will be gone, basically. He never said wiped out. That was all the white fright and yellow journalism of the time, saying that that was all a war dance and that the natives were hoping to wipe out the white man. That's not at all what his message was. It was basically that it was going to be returned to the time before the white man. It was misconstrued and led, of course, pretty much directly to the massacre at Wounded Knee and the people that were adherent to the ghost dance that weren't going to return to the reservation. So that's my side of the history lesson part. But so from what you're telling me, Wovoke could kind of be, he'd be pretty much a mixture of both, I would assume. More of a shaman, though, because he's saying that the people who had gone before had spoken to him and said that it was going to be this way.
Mm-hmm. We do. We speak with spirit, and it's not just human spirits. There are others on the other side. There are animal spirits, spirits, the spirit of the woods. I'm sure you guys have heard something like that before, mm-hmm. or elementals.
Yes.
Anything that can spiritually connect, we can, in a sense, connect with that. Any of those different things, and we get information from them. We get directions. We get pointed to go a different way, or we get told to get out. It just depends on the situation and what's going on. When you're saying about the ghost dance, I do understand a little bit about that. Is yes, it wasn't that they were going to wipe out the white man. My understanding is when the dance is done, when the song has been sung, that there will no longer be red man, white man, yellow, black. We will all be one people. We will no longer be separated. We will mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally be one being, in a sense. We won't notice the difference. We won't be able to separate in our mind that there's a difference. We'll just be the people of Earth. That's what my understanding is, what's to come.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that now that you're saying that, I think that was part of what I picked up as well. And I mean, a lot of it is the interpretation, as they say.
Right.
History's written by the winners, and unfortunately, we pretty much wiped out all the natives, so we write what we think was their interpretation of things, which is probably mm-hmm. exactly the opposite of what was really the interpretation. But I think what I'm attracted to by the native culture is like you said, the elementals. I mean, the sun dance, the rain dance. I mean, the way the grieving process, you know, cutting strips of skin off, cutting the hair. And at least for sure I think it's probably applies to all the native tribes that I'm aware of. The Lakota have the colors in the medicine wheel, but the four, they talk about the elemental wheel.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't believe they call it the elemental wheel, but they attach the elements to it. And we probably added that name to it. So, do you think earlier cultures, not just Native American cultures, but obviously the early cultures around the world, do you think they're probably far more tapped into what spirituality is than we are nowadays?
Yes, because we have we have technology, we have other things that we use and look into. Back then it was more of an oral history. People mm-hmm. were more connected to themselves and the people in their area. They were nowadays, we're like right now, we're how many miles away separated, yet we're here together. It's the technology. Back then, I would have had to come to you or you to me just to do this.
Right.
So, yeah, I think everybody was much more attached spiritually and much more aware of what was going on. Nowadays, it seems like a lot of people are, like you said, the ghost dance, we're waiting for the awakening. We're waiting for everybody to wake up, to remember, to become. And that, I think, is what he was alluding to.
Okay. Well, that takes me to another point then. And this is why I love these conversations with you, because the way you relay things to me usually leads me to think more than I had before. And that's the kind of conversations I love to have, because you should always
yes.
more if you can. So, talking about the misrepresentation and that and misunderstanding of what certain things meant, do you believe that that's led some to, I don't want to say the demonization, but the looking down upon of spiritual people that are in tune with, as you said, spirit or have the gifts that you have, people poo-poo it away? Is that just easier to do than to try to understand it? Because we don't have that connection with nature and spirit and things that we used to?
Yes, I think it's because people are afraid. You know, if it's something that they don't understand, it's not something they can put in their hand and see and hold and touch, they fear it. And what they fear makes them angry, makes them prejudiced against it, because it's easier to do that than to take the time to understand and learn.
And I believe at one of my conventions that I had you speak at, you said that everyone should have that ability within themselves. It's just a matter of understanding it.
That's correct.
But
I believe everybody has gift, and they just have to. Yeah, are there some born more open to it and able to use it right away? Yes. But I believe everybody has gift if they're willing to take the time to learn how to use it and put the time into growing that gift. If you don't, then you won't have it as much and you won't understand.
Along the same lines, there are people that maybe seek out help with that find people that want to take advantage of it and use it in a detrimental way, right?
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, there are all types, and unfortunately that does happen.
And I hate to say that's probably human nature to try to take advantage.
Agreed.
To be the case. Okay. Well, I tread lightly in the idea of getting religion into this, but it kind of falls into the same thing as far as your Salem witch trials and people that were deemed witches. You know, that's, I think it's fair to say religious zealotry led to them not understanding, therefore it's an easier explanation to just deem somebody a witch and execute them. I would like to think that's not still the case with people now. It's just, oh, it's fake, and you don't have to necessarily want to eradicate people because of it. But that's getting heavy, and that's getting religion there, so I probably should venture away from that just a little bit till I have a nice established audience that understands where I head with these things.
No, it's okay. It's you know, a lot back then, again, there was fear because they didn't understand how people who understood herbs could heal, could change things, could do things. Right. They didn't understand it. So again, there was the fear. So people who were herbalists were labeled as witches. Yes, there were those who followed a different faith back then. But I think most of the people they ended up taking out were people who were just innocent people who knew herbs and different things like that, or used poppets, but not so much for evil, but for good things.
Yeah, and then it's weird to me how you see some other cultures that absolutely embraced the same thing. I mean, that's who you went to for answers.
Right.
In other areas of the world. I guess it still just gets me how I can't even call them the founders, but some of the first people over here to North America were supposedly fleeing religious persecution, but yet then they became persecutors themselves.
Right.
That's a whole different conversation.
Yeah. I don't think the humans have fallen too far from the tree, no matter where they originally came from.
No, it doesn't seem to be the case at all. You're absolutely right. Have you, in all of your learning about these things, have you discovered some, for lack of a better term, geological areas that the people do embrace this far more now? I know a lot of people have gotten into the runes and the Viking culture and the Celtic culture and things of that nature. Do you find people that still adhere to that a lot more are far more open to this?
I think those that are of the Celtic. I think they embrace it a little bit more. Here in America, it seems to be if you're farther north or much further south, you're good. You just got that middle Bible Belt that still struggles. I'm here in northern Indiana, and what I create, what I do is not accepted in any way in my area. You drive an hour north or drive an hour south, I'm good. It just seems to be
really?
The Bible Belt. We're part of the Bible Belt, so they struggle. They struggle with that.
I guess I'm slightly surprised to hear that the South is accepting.
In spots.
More intolerant.
In spots.
Okay.
Not.
So
you know, consider the Bible Belt. It does that dip, so yeah.
Sure. Right. So probably safe to assume if you're a native of Louisiana, then you're all about this stuff because that's
it's accepted down there. It's almost expected.
Right. Okay. Let's hit on another couple little things, if you don't mind, just to
sure. To
hit on the key words in some of these things. And since I just mentioned Louisiana, where does the practice of voodoo fall into the discussion we're having? I mean, I don't understand voodoo at all. It's always been made out to be.
I will give you my best interpretation. My best understanding is that voodoo is actually kind of like African witchcraft in a sense, because a lot of the slaves came over. They were stripped of everything, including the clothing, before they were sold.
Sure.
Wanting to be able to hold on to their histories and their knowledge, not being able to talk about the things that they grew up with or knew to their children or the next generation after that, they had to hide it. So a lot of the different saints and stuff that are celebrated within the Catholic Church or the Christian Church, they use them as, in a sense, they use those same saints, but they meant something different for them. So this was a way for them to, in a sense, free themselves, get back, and to hold on to their culture.
Okay. And I think what probably makes things worse is, and I have not looked up the definition, so I don't know this for sure, so forgive me. But if you title anything witchcraft, it automatically now has that connotation of being something evil and mystic. Or the word witch, even. It's been portrayed as you know, these evil creatures that can cast these spells and kill you. Again, I know that goes to the not understanding and fear of the unknown. But what is, I mean, if you attach witch to something, is that essentially saying that it does not fall into the normal religious understanding of things? Am I anywhere near being right on that, or is that way off?
I think it's people's perceptions of different lifestyles that don't fit into their parameters. Say somebody, again, go back to somebody who works with herbs. One side calls them green witches or kitchen witches. Other people would say, oh, they're just somebody who grows their own herbs, uses them, and knows what they're used for. So that type of thing. So there are differences. There are those that walk the path, the Wiccan path. So I don't know that much about it. I know a little bit about it only because I cater to those people. I've catered to those who walk the pagan lifestyle. There's just so many different lifestyles out there that are more, how can I say, not wild, but more nature-based, more, you know, different than our own. They remember the old, they embrace it, they use it in everyday life and in their religion, where we've gotten away from it. The actual Christian church has gotten away from that a lot more.
Okay, so again, it goes to that being open and understanding that you are open to these things,
mm-hmm.
instead of just being closed off.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, don't label things until you really understand.
And that's why I wanted to have this conversation, and every chance we get to have conversations like this is I don't want to consider myself closed off. I want to understand better. I know that I am skeptical, but I want to understand. I don't just say, oh, that's bullshit. I don't do that.
Right.
I don't know. So how can I say that it is?
Right. And I am no expert in any way. I'm just giving you what information I have.
Sure. But you have lived it. And as you said, third generation of...
a psychic medium, yes.
Getting and living this way, so yeah. So, I know there's people that are going to wonder, and I know this is going to get a little heavier for you, and you tell me if you need breaks, if you need to cut off any of the conversation, whatever you need. I care more about you than getting my answers, so you just tell me to shut up or whatever I need to do. On the psychic side, I don't know the terminology, but you have told me that you have essentially been able to, I don't know if even channel is the right word, but enter into other people and see things through their eyes. What, I guess I don't know the term for that either, even. So what is that term? And
I don't know the exact term. I don't know. For me, it's just something I've always been able to do.
Okay.
Just I relax, I drop down into the zone, and I connect. It's like being able to find someone's soul lifeline. You just tap, you jump, you tap, and you can tap into that person. You ask spiritually permission. Sometimes it's yes, sometimes it's no. I think I've used it most when there's been people that called me and asked, can you help me find my aunt who was lost? My brother has gone missing. We fear for him. So that's some of the different ways that I have used it. I've literally gone within to find that person. And again, that kind of also when I was studying to learn to become a shaman, that's part of what shamans do. So it was an easy step into that journey, which I still feel like I'm beginning, and I think I will always be a student when it comes to shamanism. But it's stepping in, tapping in. From everybody perceives and sees differently on from to the other side. For me, when I'm trying to find somebody, I tap in and I try and get the most recent information in the sense through their eyes. Sometimes it's somebody's last thoughts. Other times it's what's going on with them right now. I know there was an instant where someone was asking me to find their brother because he was missing and they really feared for him because he'd been having some issues. And the woman's begging, please, please find him. I said, okay. I connected with him. I'm like, oh God, you need to go here. You need to find him. He's in these woods. No, go to the left. I'm literally on the phone with the woman. I'm going, go to the left, go to the left. Okay, straight ahead. It's like I am seeing through this gentleman's eyes the steps he was taking, where he was going.
Wow.
And I actually was able to see that he had climbed up a tree and he had tied a rope. And I saw him making a noose. I'm like, he's going to kill himself. And I'm going, go faster, go faster. Well, then I heard her screaming and I came to realize what I was seeing were his last moments. He had actually done it the day before. But I don't know that because I'm picking up on those last moments. There's not a clock in front of me or a calendar. I'm just seeing, I'm letting her know what I see. But later, when I was able to reconnect, I was able to see, and this runs definitely into the darkness. With this gentleman, he actually put that rope in the tree the day before he actually committed suicide. And the scary thing was that when he was able to push away from that tree and get down, and he wanted to just think about it some more, and he went home. But the next day he must have given in because he went back to the tree, climbed up, and as I'm with him his last few moments, again, like I said, I'm replaying it again, seeing him, I'm actually seeing what looks like something dark and shadowy near him, and it's almost kind of got this hoarse little whisper going, just do it, you know you want to do it, just do it, you're not worth anything. And it's going, and it's just literally at him constantly saying these things. And I'm like, I can understand now why he struggled. He didn't want to, but in the end, he just gave in. I don't know how it is for other people, but just before he jumped, I jumped out because I did not want to experience it with him. Yeah. And there are times when you are asked to help and you see things or experience things that those people have gone through that you can never unsee. So that's the downside of being a psychic medium.
Right.
You can't unsee something.
I know that you told me that. I was going to say, I know you told me that before, is once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. So you still have some of that burden on you.
In a sense, you carry their nightmare with you. It's not something I dwell on, but it's there.
My question then, for that part then, with a little bit of understanding I have with what Sage does when she does tarot, she gets a name if somebody wants her to look into something. Do you need any kind of attachment to these people? Obviously,
it makes it easier. Especially when you are doing a reading for someone or doing tarot, usually the person's right there or on the phone. In a sense, for me, I basically connect to that person and then make the jump to the person that they want to know about or the family member. It's imagine the person being a telephone pole and there's wires between, and you jump from that person. Okay, maybe it's not that person. Maybe it's their child, so it's your nephew. Your nephew, you would jump from your brother to his son. So that for me, it's like jumping from telephone pole to telephone pole, following those lines. And that's how I make the connection with the person. When somebody who's lost and I don't know them, sometimes I ask if it's available and they can get it to me, something they owned, that makes it even stronger. Like sweater, toy, whatever, that makes it much easier to find the person because you make that connection. So that one, I'm not making, in a sense, a spiritual connection. I'm making an emotional connection through what they had held last or worn the most.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So I know that you've told me, and we're not going to get into specifics because I think some of these things are still ongoing or open.
Yes.
When you have been approached by law enforcement or even private investigators trying to find certain answers about either a missing person or somebody that has already been a murder victim and they are trying to better understand what might have happened, do you ever turn any of those requests down? And if you do or don't, which leads you to make that decision?
There's been one or two, not so much turned down, but I put a halt on because the person that had done the murdering is still alive and still able to. I don't need them coming to me. I don't need that. I don't need them to know that I know. So I would give the people who asked as much information as they could use, but stopped and said, okay, from this point on, I have to stop because I could be in danger. So this was from someone who was actually a serial killer, and I was able to make the connection to where at least one of the bodies is buried. So I had to stop because that person does not need to know that I know.
Okay. And that information, I assume, was the little bit that you did get as far as the location.
It's known. It's been written down. But at this point, I think everything has stopped. The weird thing was, though, because of making that connection, some of the other victims that the serial killer has taken out have sought me out, the spirits. They want to be found. They want people to know I'm here. The problem is sometimes they don't know exactly where here is. They can show me a field. They can show me a rock. They can show me a tree and say, this is where I'm at. But it could be anywhere in the United States or Europe. I don't know. Okay. They're from the other side. And it's kind of like, hey, so-and-so is making a connection to the same guy that took you out. Maybe you want to talk to, you know. I don't know how they get to the other side. It's somehow several of the other people that this person has taken, has killed, sought me out. So I wrote down the information. If we ever open up the case again, I will make sure that they will get this information. I don't know how helpful it's going to be. Like I said, other than showing them a picture that I drew, that this is what the rock looks like that this person is buried at behind or under. That's and it's in a field and it looks like that's really it. So.
Okay. And these people that have passed and have found you because of this work, do they all come to you? I can't think of how I want to say it. Easily, do they come to you with an understanding of what you are and what you are doing? Or are they still just like kind of purgatory, what the hell's going on and who are you? Do they understand what you're doing?
They understood, but not quite sure how it worked, how it all worked. It was the connection was made. I wrote down their information. They bugged me for quite a while to push to get them found, because even though this person is incarcerated, family members are not, and it's never been established whether or not family was involved or not. I want to stay safe. I don't want the information that I can give them to be used, to be found. And they're like, well, how did you find out this information? Well, so-and-so told us. So we looked at, and, right. You know, so I'm trying to protect myself as well. And not just myself, but my family.
Of course.
But yeah, so I've done things like that, but I'm a paranormal investigator. I've been one for over 18 years, so sometimes I use my gift that way too.
I was going to say, I know you had mentioned an encounter with, not 100% sure whether it was John Dillinger or somebody that wanted to portray themselves as John Dillinger.
Oh, God, yes, that was.
It's about that one because.
A while ago, I think it was, let me see here. What year was it? I was trying to think. Ooh, quite a few. Probably 2015. I don't know how many of you have ever heard of the Barbie Hotel. It's in Warsaw, Indiana. Now, I had gone with
Warsaw?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, the Barbie Hotel. Let me see. I got a little bit of history here. It was first built in 1897. And it survived through quite a few ages, has 7 or 8 owners since then. It's nestled between the Big and Little Barbie Lakes in Warsaw. Clark Gable and Carol Lombard reportedly visit there quite often to get away from Hollywood. It was also the perfect hideout to wind down and to hang out with their girlfriends for different infamous people like Al Capone, John Dillinger, Babyface Nelson. They have all been known to have been there from time to time have stayed there.
Well, I feel like Dillinger's crimes that occurred in Warsaw also. I think that's why I know it. I don't know if it was a bank robbery. A lot of people don't realize he was also pulled off robberies of police departments to get ammunition and bulletproof vests from back in the day.
Wow.
So he used to rearm himself by robbing police departments.
Okay. All right. Now, I know that the Travel Channels, the Dead Files have been there. I also know that at this time, the Barbie Hotel is not allowing any investigations whatsoever. At that time, I think the group that I had gone in with had literally bought out I think there were like 4 or 5 actual rooms. They bought out all of them for the night, and let the group do their investigation there. But there were quite a few things that happened at the Barbie Hotel. Back in room 301, we were doing some EVP, and we could hear that there were other people in the room, and we could get it on EVP, but we couldn't make out what they were saying. So that some of that happened. There was another room where everybody who walked in, not just people with gift, but everybody felt like there was somebody else in the room. And there was a corner of the room that was heavy. You literally walked, and it almost felt like you were pushing through Jell-O. And it was like a game. Everybody was trying to push through. Oh, this is cool. This is cool. It's really hard to walk. And so that was a really weird occurrence. So there must have been something there or something spiritual left there, something heavy, whatever had happened there. It was just a very weird sensation. But there was another room that we had gone into, and I'm very quickly checking my notes if I can remember what the room it was. I know it was a room that everybody at one time had said there was a portal at. I didn't really feel like there was a portal or anything in there, there were definitely spirits had congregated there. And one of them, we got in there, there were like five of us. And my friend Karen, her and I do a lot of investigations together. She kind of watches over me because there are times when I go within. In a sense, it's kind of, if I go deep enough, it's like I'm straddling the veil. I'm half here and half there. And there have been times I've literally walked into walls or tripped over headstones because what was there then may not be there now or vice versa. So she kind of watches over me. So we were in this room at the Barbie Hotel, and we got in. We all sat down. They were getting ready to do EVP, and this spirit just appeared, and he was very, very animate. He was very easy to see. I could see the way he was dressed. He looked like the typical 1920s, 1930s gangster, you know, with the hat, the vest, the white shirt, the cuffs, just the shoes, everything. And not all the time can I see the spirits. It just depends on how well they can come through. And now, I did not know at the time when I went that Dillinger was somebody who had been there before, or even what Dillinger looked like. So we're starting the EVP, and the spirit comes in. He looks everybody around, and he looks straight at me. And he walks over, he flips out a switchblade, and he gets right in my face. He keeps going, ha, ha, I'm going to cut the pretty. And it's back and forth in my face. I'm literally like trying to push him away with my hands. Of course, you just go right through them. But because he was so in my face and annoying, and Karen knew something was up because I was sitting so stiffly and I was sitting so still and didn't move. Even though the room was dark, she knew. And she goes, are you okay? I said, not really. She goes, all right. Now, Karen's very grounded. Normally, if I start having a problem, she'll stand between me and whatever's there. And because she's so grounded, they seem to back off as if she can hold them where they're at, just from her being so grounded. But he wasn't letting up, and he was constantly kept coming back. He would go to other people, but he didn't get a reaction. They weren't seeing him. So he kept coming to me, kept waving the switchblade in my face, and he was just getting really nasty, saying some really ugly things, trying to whisper in my ear. And for the first time ever, I stood up and walked out of an investigation. It was just unnerving. I didn't feel unsafe. I just felt it was so unnerving. So I left and I walked down the steps. I did not go any further because if I went to the bottom of the steps, I would have had to go in the next room where another group was doing EVP because each group went to a different area. So I just sat on the steps and waited. Well, sure enough, a few minutes later, here he comes down the steps, and you can hear him down the steps, gets in front of me, waves the switchblade, laughs, and goes back up the steps. And he does it like four or five times. And he's just being really, really annoying. Well, they finally called the end of the night. They were done investigating. Everybody came back down to the main room. And I apologized to the group that was there. I said, look, I apologize. At this time, you will hear my footsteps on the steps. So make sure that you understand that that was me. You know, take that out of anything that you guys hear. They said, well, who was running up and down the steps? I said, I was the only one. And I gave them the time. They said, no, we heard somebody go up and down the steps repeatedly. We have EVP. And I said, okay, well, let me tell you what happened.
Sure.
So we get all done, and we are finishing. We're getting ready to pack up, and they finally passed out the information, which then told me that, you know, Capone, Dillinger, Babyface, they had all been there. Well, they had a picture of Dillinger, and I went, oh, my God. That's the guy. Literally had the houndstooth brown vest and pants and hat and white shirt that he had on in the picture. That's how I found out it was Dillinger, or something pretending to be Dillinger's ghost. So if it was Dillinger, he is a real piece of work. So, but
sure.
it was just an unnerving night.
And that was going to lead to another question, as a matter of fact, because everything that I have read, and I'm not an expert on him, but I have read a lot, that doesn't seem like that would be the nature that everybody described him having.
Mm-hmm.
Have you come across, if you knew somebody and had either researched or knew what their disposition was in life, can it be a 180 in the spirit world, or do they tend to keep the same disposition?
From what I can understand from talking to different spirits, if there are those who have died but not crossed over, they stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
If they have died but crossed over, and they've kind of, in a sense, gone through a bit of their own ascension, they do come back different. They're more, it's a calming spirit. They've got a quieter voice. It's kind of like their true selves. They're no longer who or what they were here on Earth, where if they've died but not crossed over, they stay who they were.
Okay. But no real case of somebody that was a saint in real life and comes back as a genuine asshole.
Not that I have experienced, no.
Okay, good. I was wondering. See, that goes...
I've had a few spirits play jokes on me, but, you know. No. But yeah, the spirit world also likes to play jokes, so be aware of that. They think things are funny.
Is it ever harmful? Or is it just practical joke type stuff?
Just practical joke type stuff. I had a jokester that was in our house for a couple years. Trying to get rid of him was it took me like 2-3 years to get rid of him. He just kept coming back, and it was finally one night where it was very late, very quiet. I was on the computer up in our living room, and it was in the corner of the room, and it was dark. And when I flipped to another page, I could see what was behind me because the screen was darker, and I could see a face coming through our screen door because the door was open. Like, literally, I know you guys have all seen those horror pictures where it looks like they're coming through the wallpaper or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was like. And I was like, that's it. You're done. You're out of here. And I did everything I could to get rid of him. Finally, he just went away, and he hasn't been back. But yeah, no, just little joke stuff where, you know, something goes missing, you can't find it, and you're like, guys, I have to have this, I need my car keys, where are they, you know? And I'll look, can't find them, and I'll turn around after looking in the bedroom, and there they will be sitting dead center in the middle of the table where I know they were not there a minute before.
Right.
You know, little stuff like that. They do that from time to time.
Okay.
Keep you on your toes, laugh a little bit, get a few jokes. I'm sure I played a few when I was on the other side, because that just seems like something I would have done. So.
Right. Taking it a little lighter and into the pop culture type of realm, I guess, just because I want to, and I have you here available, so I might as well. First, I'll say this. I'm trying to think of places that I've been that are supposed to have paranormal activity, are supposed to be haunted. If mm-hmm. And there again, that word I have learned through you and Sage is not necessarily what a lot of people understand haunted to be. It just means we all have energy, some energy's left behind. It doesn't have to be evil.
Right.
It's just what it is. Being on the more skeptical side, I think the first place that I've been, and I don't know if you've been here, I want to find out if you've been to these places and what your thoughts are on them. The first one, and it's related to John Dillinger, is Crown Point Jail, the old jail and sheriff's house. That's the one that Dillinger broke out of with the wooden gun or gun made of soap, whichever story you believe. That, of course, is supposed to be one of the more haunted places in the state of Indiana. I didn't feel anything there. I enjoyed the history and the age of the place. I liked walking through it. I found it very cool. And Sandy, who runs the jail at one point, let me go down to the basement. She says, nobody gets to go down to the basement, but I'll let you go down there. And there was some creepy stuff there, but nothing where I felt like it was dangerous or I was in danger mm-hmm. or there was a heaviness. There was nothing like that there. Have you been to Crown Point?
I have not been to the Crown Point Jail. It is on my bucket list. Unfortunately, Last year, I was actually supposed to go in the summertime, but of course, that all COVID put a kibosh on that. So, again, I will try to get there, but no, that was, I have been to the State Theater in South Bend, Indiana, where Capone had his shootout in the, at the bank, which was across the street, in the street, and there's bullet holes in the State Theater. There was not, there are things there, but not Capone and nothing heavy and nothing evil. Out of 18 years of investigating, Brian, all the different places I've gone, I can only say that there's only really, truly been one time that I actually feared for my life. All the other times it was just kind of like, you know, the Barbie, where it was either I was unnerved or it was just something I just like, okay, enough. I'm done for the night. So,
sure.
Yes, what are some of the other places you've been or want to know?
Bachelor's Grove. Everybody talks about Bachelor's Grove. I finally went for the first time. I believe it was last year because, heck, it's outdoors and you don't have to worry about COVID or anything. And from the very first time, a lot of people talked about as soon as you hit the fence and the entrance that it gets cooler. Well, I poo-pooed that away by saying, well, it's in the shade. Of course, that makes sense. You're coming from a sunny path. You hit the shade, the cool part. I thought that was a decent explanation for my purposes. But walking through the place, I liked the historical elements, and you can tell me if I'm weird or something here, but I felt very homey. I wanted to stay. I even mentioned to Sage, I said, you know, I could come up here with a tent some night, and I would not at the least be creeped out by spending the night up here. I feel very comfortable here.
And now, I'll tell you now, actually, gone into the cemetery, no. What I was, as there is an Irish heritage sort of restaurant bar thing.
Yeah, it's a big bank
literally
hall
the field
type of
across
thing.
From it. Okay. Or there's a woods between that and the cemetery. Okay. The woods that's attached to the cemetery. That's I was at the woods, a little bit in the woods, as well as at that Irish heritage place. And I will tell you that there was some creepy crap going on that night. There was a group that went in, and Ursula Bielski, I don't know if you've ever heard of her. She runs the Chicago Hauntings.
I have.
Yes.
Yep.
She goes there quite a bit, and she knows that place like the back of her hand. She knows the woods. She knows everything. Well, they went in from the Irish Heritage Place side, and they went in there, and they were in the woods trying to make it through to get to the cemetery. And she said that she and I guess there were like 12 other people, they ended up seeing lights, which they thought were like from farmhouses and houses nearby. And they would go to them and they would be just about to go through the bushes the other side and the light would disappear. There were flashing lights. There were creepy sounds. There were a lot of weird things happened. I only got a couple foot into the woods and I just got the feeling that it was just like, there was some weird crap going on that weekend. Don't know what it was. It was just like, you know what?
Okay.
I don't need to be in here this weekend. I'm just going to go back into the bar.
Oh, wow. So
you know, again, it could just be everybody's going to have their different perspective. Maybe you went on a day that was good. Maybe I went on a weekend where some stuff was going down around it that just changed the whole atmosphere.
Okay. Well, I don't remember how many months after that, but we did take the girls up there too, so they could see it, and it was still the same feeling for me though.
Okay.
So am I dead inside, Tina?
No. No, I think you see the good side of everybody, and it could. I'm going to have to go to the cemetery myself sometime, and experience it. Like I said, I was on the other side of the woods, experienced that part.
Okay. Well, I can tell you something about it
that has the problem, and it leaks into the cemetery from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little lagoon type of thing that's grown with all kinds of stuff. And yeah, I will tell you something about the place that will piss you off, though, because it pisses me off, is the vandalism to the stones.
Oh,
and
I
people
hate
just,
that.
It's just bullshit. I mean, some of those things, like Sage showed me, were not disrespectful. You could see a lot of candle wax on some of them. And, of course, coins on some others. There is a little girl that's buried there, and there's all kinds of little stuffed animals and toys left around that one. That's respectful. But then there's other ones that are just clearly been kicked over, I don't know how many times. There's spray paint on some of them, and it's, I appreciate cemeteries. I love going to cemeteries, and to see that kind of stuff just pisses me off to no end.
Me too. I really don't like that.
There's no purpose for that.
No.
Let's see. Another place that I know you're extremely familiar with, and I just went for the first time a couple years ago, is Ashmore Estates.
Love it. And, love that place.
Yeah. I was going to say, there again, I fell in love with the place too, but it was just basically the old architecture, the old feel. Mm-hmm. Everything just felt homey to me. There is that area by the that oil heater that's supposed to be the portal, I think, that Sage pointed out to me.
I don't know.
I did go in front of there. I did feel some weight, like in my mm-hmm. chest, just a little tightness type of thing that I couldn't explain. That went away as soon as I moved from in front of it. But I think that's about the extent of what I felt there.
Okay.
Clearly daytime, not nighttime, so.
Yeah. And I will say I've never been there late at night. I've been there during the day and early evening. And I've literally been there during the day when there is paracons going on and heard a child laugh and run. Now, that doesn't mean that there couldn't have been children there, but the minute I heard this child laughing and running down the hallway, my head was out the little room I was in. I'm looking, and there's mm-hmm. nobody there. And a vendor from another room across the hall was doing the same thing. She goes, "Did you?" I said, "Hear a kid running?" She goes, "Yeah." I said, "There's nobody here." She goes, "Ah, but there used to be."
I was going to say, there's supposed to be that little girl. I don't remember her name.
Yeah.
Yeah, Elva is supposed to be there. And I know mm-hmm. Robin has that tricycle that he has yeah. told me that he knew he left one place and
oh, yeah.
somewhere else.
Yeah.
So.
And another time and I was there, I got to speak with a female spirit that I was setting up. And, it, you know, people who have gift in music quite frequently, I think we're lit up in a way that kind of attracts spirit, or maybe there's a vibration sure. brings them in for whatever the reason. But I was there setting up for another different paracon about a year or two later, and a woman walked in, and she had on a probably I'd say about a 1930s 1940s dress, because it was shorter, it was up her leg a little bit, but she had a shawl on, and her hair was back, but not like in a severe bun or anything. So I'm thinking she's about 30s or 40s. And maybe even early 50s. And she came in and she's asked me what I'm doing. Why am I doing this? You know, and I'm explaining things to her. And it finally got to the point. She was going, "Okay, what's that? What's that?" I'm like, "Honey, I want to talk to you all day, but I really have to take the time to set this stuff up." So I kind of excused myself. And she just, after a few minutes, she kind of faded away. So it was cool. I was like having a conversation with somebody, but sure. you know, can't do that all day.
Right. Yeah, and now that I'm thinking about places that I've been, I'm sure some of them people would think would have some kind of leftover effects, lingering effects, mm-hmm. but clearly I didn't feel them there. I mean, I've been to the site of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. It's just a vacant lot now,
mm-hmm.
but I guess I didn't think or feel anything heavy there. Another one that's near, I guess maybe it's not too near Ashmore, but the airtight bridge where they found the torso in the water there of a murder victim. Supposedly that's the area supposed to be haunted. It's kind of creepy in a Deliverance type of way, but I didn't get anything else. I have been, as you know, I've been to a lot of places that have either directly or indirectly been involved in dark stuff, murders. Mm-hmm. School shootings, things of that nature, and I guess I've never picked any of that up, and I think Sage has explained a little bit in that some of those, especially ones with younger victims, like the Heath High School in Kentucky, I mean, I think those were all 16 or under were the victims, where they just, their life was snuffed out so fast they don't understand what happened, so they're not attached to that, because that's mm-hmm. not where they're from. I mean, they are attached to their family. They might be attached to their house still, but not necessarily the location where their life was taken.
Right. Well, and think about that. If you passed away from a murder, do you want to hang out where you were murdered?
No, I wouldn't think so. And that's also another one where I have taken her in my travels now that we're together and ask her what she picks up from these things. We've been by where John Wayne Gacy's house used to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, what was it, 29 victims found on this property? But she said there's nothing there. I mean, even though mm-hmm. they were, in essence, interred there for a while, there's nothing there. Now, with Dahmer's apartment, she could feel kind of where the stuff happened, but I don't think anybody was really attached to that anymore either, right? It was just, just leftover energy, not so much victim.
Exactly. Sometimes it's not really spirit. It's not spirits. It's just energy. It's so heavy and it's so imprinted because it was so tragic. It was so horrible. There are times when I've been around places that have had uber good energy that it's imprinted.
Right.
Like theaters. Theaters usually have such great energy. Everybody goes, oh, there's spirits here. There's usually a spirit or two in every theater I've been in, but it's usually good energy. That's why they want to hang out there.
Okay.
So.
That makes perfect sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier when you were talking about not knowing if you had a light about you or something that spirits can be attracted, that makes perfect sense to me too. Because... yeah, we have to have a beacon or some kind of connection. I mean, like you mentioned, you and I had never met you before, but I instantly felt at ease. So
yep.
That stuff makes sense to me. I have no explanation for it, but it makes sense. So, yeah, a number of places that I would love to travel to with you and Sage both just to see where things. I know I relayed to you on your show one time about Columbine.
Yeah,
I think the first time I'd been out there was probably 2010, 2011, somewhere around there. And, of course, I remembered the event happening when it happened. I did a lot of as much research as I could onto all of those things, and that's what I attributed it to. When I got there, I could almost see the scene it laid out in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I explained it, I mean, I could see Rachel Scott laying at the bottom of the stairs. I could see the victims that were outside. I could see where the cars were parked for Eric and Dylan. And when I say that to most people, they're like, yeah, whatever, you're nuts. And I always attributed it to I had been so immersed in the research that it made it easy. But I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
When I told you that before, you're like, oh, you're probably more open than you thought you were.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
There are people that can literally, in a sense, see or mentally, spiritually transport themselves back to where and when something happened. I mean, you can. That's a gift that people have, where you can see what used to be.
And even though I am completely clueless in those practices or how it's done, It still could be a bit of that?
Why not?
Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so.
Okay.
And it's the fact that you researched this and get that information, in a sense, has already opened the door for you. And when you go to these places, it's like the door's already open. You've just stepped through. Okay, now you're seeing it. Now you're seeing it almost as if it's happening then and there. You can see where the buildings where they used to be, but now they're knocked down, or you know, or where the fire had happened prior to it taking the whole building, or where people who passed away, where they were before they passed. Like,
okay, I'm not sure if I want to open another can of worms with you because we've kept you talking long enough, I think.
I'm fine. Hey, we could talk as long as we want. You could take it into two different shows. There you go. Part one and part two.
I could certainly do that.
I'm just going to interject right here for a quick moment. Brian and I did agree that we were going to split the episode up into two parts. So be sure to be on the lookout for the second part. In the meantime, feel free to go out and check Dark History and Horror Convention. You can find them on Facebook. That is coming up October 23rd, and tickets are currently available So if you go pick yourself up a ticket, tell your friends and family. Tina Marie will be at the convention, so feel free to grab some merch off of her. She is a part of three businesses. If you're into custom hats, especially top hats, she has Heirloom Aberdashery. She does amazing work, did a hat for yours truly, Brian. She's also a part of Three Sisters Smudging. She's also the owner of Nature's Earthware, which you can find on Facebook for all your metaphysical needs and gear. So that's plenty to keep you busy in the meantime while you wait for the second part. And thank you as always for listening, and stay tuned.